Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. I'm with Mick Douglas, a self-confessed long-distance solo hiker. He's worked as an artist researcher into creative practice at RMIT University in Melbourne, Australia, for 3 decades. Much of his work was around the interaction of people within modes of transport, comparing practices in cities in Australia to cities in India. We're walking along the uneven shingle beach of the Great Prespa Lake in Western Macedonia, in northwest Greece, as Mick has come to present a piece of work at the Walking Arts Encounters there. He's here to talk about and demonstrate a piece he developed for an unusual festival in New Zealand, in which he takes a solo hike for 4 days within a shipping container. If that's not unusual enough, he goes on to tell me how he's hosting and ghosting walks around a 40-acre block of land. He is developing an ecological practice in which he invites people to engage with their surroundings, in part listening to commentary that he's created as a sound walk.
We're walking along beside a little Prespa Lake. Is this Great Prespa Lake?
Yes, this is the big Prespa
Lake.
This is
the big Prespa Lake in northwest Greece. So what's brought Mick Douglas, an Australian, all the way here?
Yeah, well, I've been long aware of the community that associates with walking arts, particularly in Europe, and a convergence of a number of factors enabled me to make the big trek, and I didn't walk, from southeastern Australia or Jabiru Jadwajali country where I live to Europe and now to Greece. And in fact, 2 weeks ago I've walked a new community initiative trail in the Peloponnese in southwest Greece, the Menelon Trail, with my partner and daughters and daughter's boyfriend and boyfriend's mother, and knowing that this conference was on, a few things have fallen into place. So it's great to connect with some of this community that I've been aware of from afar but not really been participating in.
And so what have you been doing further afield?
Well, I come from a mixed background that has me somewhat inter or trans or anti-disciplinary. Part of that has been socially engaged, artwork, interested in forms of mobility and movement, particularly in urban settings.
You're an urban man, are you?
Yes, I've primarily been living in an urban setting and developed a number of projects that use a mode of movement through urban networks as a platform for arts encounters, temporary socially engaged art, installation, performance. So that's included working with tramway systems in Melbourne and Kolkata, with minibus systems and tramways in Karachi and Melbourne, with pedal-powered transport in a move to encourage more basically embodied relations to oneself, to each other, and to place and energy systems. And I've always been a hiker, enjoying much of the amazing land, country, environment.
So does someone pay your salary? Are you kind of academic?
Yeah. I've been a researcher, academic, artist for the last 3 decades or so, that has enabled me to do other things and not worry too much about the lack of income from most of my arts pursuits. But of course that becomes arts research, so creative practice research, and I've been heavily involved in a creative practice research doctoral program at RMIT University for many years, and that's enabled me to develop some performative approaches to creative practice research and enable others to strengthen their own inquiries into creative practice research in performative ways.
Yeah, did you start out as a dancer?
No, I started out doing a variety of different Bauhaus-inspired art design integrated course initially years and years ago on first sort of entering university, and then through industrial design, and then became increasingly the experimental process oriented person in the university sector, and tended to attract people from different disciplines who were letting go of some of their sort of disciplinary orientations and inquiring more broadly. Yeah, I guess sort of haptic relationships to place, environment, the body has always been present.
Because you've done that kind of industrial design you're mentioning, you're kind of a 3D man anyway, maybe working in more Ds than three.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yes, I guess I have a spatial and temporal sensitivity and kinetic sensitivity, sort of growing up surfing and sailing by the ocean in the Indian Ocean of Western Australia. And
God, you've made it sound really bloody awful.
Yeah.
Okay, most of my listeners are going to be really angry with this guy. They're not going to be terribly interested in what you get up to. They've heard enough.
I do acknowledge that, yeah, I've definitely been a beneficiary of uninvited settlers in that great southern continent. And now I've stepped back from university work, thinking that it's time for other people to have space and for me to turn my attention to living with land in southwest Victoria in a granite landscape 350 to 450 million years ago formed, that is challenging me and teaching me a lot, as is my developing relationships with the traditional custodians of that place.
So tell us a bit more about what you are going to be doing here at Prespas. You are going to be running a workshop here at the Walking Arts Encounters event. A rough idea of what's going to happen. This recording is going to be published many weeks, if not months after.
Yes, I'm not expecting listeners to attend. I was made aware of a performance festival in Wellington in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And that festival uses shipping containers as the sort of unit for different artists to develop different harbourside temporary public artworks. And living in neighbouring southeastern Australia, I realised I've never been to Aotearoa. So much good hiking there, so I can go walking as well as maybe do something for this festival. And then I had a dream. What if I just went for a hike in a shipping container? Which then led to a work emerging where I simply prepared myself to walk for the 4 days of the festival inside a shipping container, which would actually be opened on its large sides. So rather than being so contained, it was actually a framed setting in the glorious harbourside location, into which I simply walked all of during the open hours of the festival, from 10 a.m. in the morning till 12 midnight for the 4 days, and had with me my pack with some food, with a stove, with some water, and I would simply set out walking. I lay a bed of sea salt on the floor of the container for traction initially. But then that, of course, became a very useful tool to explore the content of sea, which, when evaporated, is left with sea salt. So this walk, it taught me a lot. In much like setting out on a hike or a walk, all I knew was that there was going to be a beginning, some sense of a middle, and some sense of an end, a duration. But what was going to happen on the way, I had no idea.
So, did you camp out overnight in your container as well?
No, I chose not to because I thought that pretense was just unnecessary. Like, no one was staying at the festival all night.
Yeah.
So they're all going home. I don't need to push that. No one would know anyway, so I'll just go and make sure I'm well rested.
We're all fairly familiar with what containers are. Can you just give us a quick dimension?
Yes, well, this is the first standard format that basically made international global shipping and the production and consumption of goods to be globally distributed. It made it possible, and that's the 20-foot by 8-foot footprint, 8-foot high shipping container made of steel. This container had a slight variation, so-called high top, a little bit higher, so it was 9'6". Old imperial measurements is, if we want some metric, that's about 6 metres by 2.4 metres in footprint.
And so how many paces was that before you had to turn around?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, I've forgotten the number.
But, lucky you, even though it must have been imprinted on your brain after 4 days.
Well, certainly imprinted in my body, and it still is, very much so. It also felt sort of familiar in having worked in trams as spaces of a particular size in which a temporary public is assembled and which I would move. That sort of spatial scale is something that really teaches me about the number of people that can be co-present to each other, aware of each other within a space and can attend to each other.
So the festival goers had to not get in the container with you.
Well, this is the very question, which...
They sort of walked past you while you were doing it, or fell into step with you?
Well, this became the interesting question in that I knew what I was doing. I was just walking. But no one else knew what I was doing or why I was doing, what I might be doing, and whether I have been doing that for long or not, or whether I'll continue to do that, and whether they can or whether they can't. So it turns into a negotiation for each spectator, audience, participant to kind of consider, what's possible here? What's going on here? And I really like, as having worked specifically in the public domain, one of my interests in public domain work is the capacity to try to unsettle social conventions and the social contract of what is happening, how we interpret or make sense of the world, what are the cultural assumptions or prohibitions or inhibitions which culturally or individually we might be navigating. So I witness people either express in words or with their bodies a sense of questioning. Can I? Can't I? Who's going to give me permission? And I would not respond. Do you think I can step in? Do you think he's been doing this forever? If I walk in, do you think he'll walk into me? I would hear people's questions. And so for the first couple of days in that first iteration through which the work really emerged, I would not speak for the first 2 hours. I just thought, it's really boring. Like, the stuff that people are asking me, I don't want to engage at that level. And I figure that I'll be offering people more if I don't respond to their hesitancy to hold and be present to the unknown and to want an answer of a sort. So it turned into a very much a gestural and eye contact and kinetic and spatial navigation with people. Some who would walk in and then I'd be walking alongside and I'd be going for a walk with someone. And together we would navigate, well, how are we going to walk in this confined space? Will I change the pattern? Does a pattern develop? Do we make and break a pattern and explore? It became very much about an energetics exchange, I feel. Then the last couple of days, it just came to me that it was the time for language, that I would introduce language. But I found myself playing a language game without having conceived it, whereby similarly there's a constraint of space in which this otherwise visually recognisable activity of, oh, there's someone walking, oh, and they're carrying a backpack, oh, it's like hiking, oh, yes, this is a culture where there's landscape and there's even leisure industries of hiking. So similarly to that spatial constraint, there came to be a language constraint in a language game that emerged, and that really started to couple the relationship between walking and talking. It started to emerge with this sense of the pace of walking, the alliterations of talking, the meter of walking, the elocution of talking, and this embodied entanglement between the body in motion and the body's capacity to speak. Language also being in this sort of interrelated motion. Unlike the terrain that we're walking through now, where we're sort of navigating variation and change, the landscape of the container walk would vary slightly in that we would be making, you know, impressions, leaving traces of walking, and that would certainly create sort of paths, and even that became a sort of a negotiation point.
Did anyone offer to carry a pack for you?
Yeah, I think they did. Yeah, I think they did.
Okay. There were some people who recognised that this was an endurance on your part.
Yeah, some people did.
For this festival, you've shipped in a container, so to speak.
Yeah.
But you're going to what? You're going to mark out the ground, or you have found a container to do it?
For Prespa here, I figured that I will simply mark the footprint of a shipping container in its 20 foot by 8 foot dimension. But I'm probably going to have to just give a very accessible introduction.
So give us a little bit idea about what comes next. Pitch in with where you think might be going. Now you've done 4 days of constrained walking.
Yeah, well, that project has been enacted by others in festivals where I haven't been able to do two performance installation projects at once. So there's been a process of transfer and transmission of that project to another walker, a dear friend. But now my work in moving to live on land, I'm developing a reparative art ecology project on a 40-acre, 16-hectare land holding that has a conservation covenant on it, and are developing that as a porous arts research ecology space. And that's slow work.
You've not set yourself a time by which you will have completed it. This is a sort this is on its way.
Yeah, and it's more questions of, yeah, what might it enable or what might it trigger as a form of change ecologically to increase biodiversity in that area, but also culturally in building stronger partnerships and building upon knowledge of Indigenous traditional owners and starting to work with fire together.
And are you thinking about non-human as well? Are you looking
indeed.
At...
Yeah, indeed. And that is the need for biodiversity and the returning of increased biodiversity to that landscape. And in having people from other parts of my life come through or that I invite, I've started using sound walks as the best way I've found to bring people into a present understanding and inhabitation of the place as visitors. So I usually go for a walk either the morning or the day before people are arriving and just do a one cut, straight to recording, walk around of the land, and we'll describe what's going on of the season, what's going on in my work and encounters with others and other species and happenstance occurrences of whatever as we are now, you know, happens on that little walk, and then set people off in small groups with headphones on that walk. And part of that is just slowing down the chatter that seems to come with a lot of our urban existence when we come into a powerful landscape. I'm sort of inviting people to just drop down a little bit, and the walking and listening embodiment seems to be the most effective way to do that, rather than me, even as we are now, walking alongside each other, to have people just listening to me in their ears whilst walking seems to be really interesting. And I'm really exploring this relationship between hosting and ghosting. People comment to me how they can hear the footsteps as they're listening with headphones to what was, of course, recorded as my footsteps, but they're hearing their own footsteps and the footsteps in a recording, and there's this interplay of being alone but not being alone, of there being that which has come before, and this sense of that there's a lot of unknowns in entering into these environments and landscapes, and that my hosting, you know, can never be complete or, you know, full. And I'm interested in, especially in a recently, historically speaking, colonised continent, where there is still so much work to do in building reconciliatory justice and acknowledging living on stolen land, that there are significant, if you like, ghosts to be dealt with, to live with.
Let me ask you first, you know, can you recommend a couple of walks? I'm not sure many of the listeners will want to try a 20-foot by 8-foot by 8-foot container walk, but they might. Have you got a couple that you can perhaps suggest or offer?
The one that is most recently in my body, as I touched on, is this Menelon Trail in the Peloponnese in southwest of Athens, which is a community, I guess, regional development initiative in an area of small villages, mountainous terrain that has increasingly reduced population and unable to retain infrastructures to have young people live there, etc. That this interconnection of old trails has been made, and the mapping system to set up 6 or so 12 to 20 kilometre day walks with villages at the end of each day with accommodation. Yeah, I really appreciate the challenges of trying to bring tourism to different areas. But I really heard how the locals who were part of the committee developing this walk appreciate that of tourists, walkers are sensitive. And for them, that gives them an interesting encounter with people and the kinds of exchanges that I had in the small villages. So that's one walk. There's a number of national parks in the area where I live. One is Gurraward, or otherwise known as the Grampians, as the Scottish, so recognise some familiarity and wanted to name it. There's interesting developments there. There's many different trails. Unfortunately, funding for conservation of national parks is being reduced globally, and much of the response to that is to try and increase tourism income in national parks, including through hiking, and hiking becoming a little bit more, well, on the positive side, sort of accessible to a diverser group of people, so that there can be varying levels of support available for those who would like, or independence for those who would like, and an increased level of amenity at campsites, which could be argued is to try and reduce the impact on the environment of visitors. So there's a variety of different sort of access points there. One trail there is called the Peaks Trail. That's the one that really is trying to get on the international long-distance hike map. Yeah, look, I mean, it's a wonderful landscape and powerful country. It's a meeting point of three different traditional owner groups as a place of exchange and gathering and ceremony. Personally, I'm a little bit apprehensive to be marketing things for sort of peak experiences. For me, as a solo long-distance hiker and others who have embodied memories of that practice themselves will recognise something about how the solo long-distance hike can actually produce some inner learning in connection with place rather than seeking to reach the climax too quickly. So I have a little bit of tentativeness about the way that hike is marketed, but I see that that's a neoliberal trend everywhere. There are advantages to more people doing more walking if we learn, different people learn different things about being more sensitive to ecological systems, then I feel like that's a good.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Mick Douglas. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.